And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, the secret oath, and the secret proceedings.
The show that asks questions about why we don't ask questions.
What the hell is going on?
This is Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park.
Deal with what's actually happening, we can make informed decisions. And not to say anything, you know, be combative about what you're saying, but I want people to understand that there are pendants. There, you can buy an engagement ring for your fiance that is RFID chipped. These things are available right now, right this second.
But what is the selling point on an RFID wedding ring? Like, why would someone want to buy that?
Have you ever dropped your wedding ring or left it somewhere or dropped it down the drain or anything like that?
Well, I tried.
Well, I have.
You have. You've lost your wedding ring. So it's basically like the Find My iPhone homing device inside a wedding ring.
If you are locatable, if you are wearing a piece of jewelry or an apparatus that is RFID chip, that can talk to your computer. It can talk to the smart buildings in the street. It can talk to the sensors in the street, actually in the street. It can talk to the lamppost. It can talk to the transit buses. It can talk to anything or be intercepted by anything. You know, right now, folks, even on the back of your calculator, if you turn it over, on the back of I have a lot of devices for my children that play music and take batteries. It's on the back of these devices as well.
Sure.
It says that the FCC will intercept the radio signals, or with radio signals, intercept this device and cause it to work in a way that was not intended by the consumer. And
yeah,
that there's nothing
allowed
you can
to
do
that.
About it.
Sure. Yeah, it's like they have an overall net of control, and they want to be into everything. They want to be able to broadcast and listen to anything that's broadcastable and listenable.
So they've got the CCTV cameras. They've got the smart cities being built right now. IBM and AT&T are doing this here in the United States for all of the large urban centers with all the servers and the software for the smart cities. They've already got a lot of it built in Dublin, Ireland. I was talking to Thomas Sheridan about this a couple of weeks ago, and he was telling me what's going on in Dublin. In Surat, India, they have buildings. In fact, Surat has completely been rebuilt as a smart city, and the buildings talk to everything. And in France, they have these fold-up cars. They don't want you to drive in the heart of certain areas in France, so they have these fold-up cars that you can use. It's electric. It runs on solar panel. It's good for about 20 miles, which is only in town anyway. And you unfold it, drive away, fold it back up, and somebody else comes along and unfolds it and drives away to where they're going.
Huh.
This technology is already here. The frightening emotional marketing tool that is being used is the depictions of it in the movies. And everyone talks about, oh, predictive programming. Okay, I get that. But when you're focused on one aspect and one manifestation of a possible outcome, and meanwhile, they're taking another route right in your face, is the dollar going to collapse? Who the hell cares? The dollar's been collapsing for a long time. Let's focus on the fact that they're pushing digital currency to the nth degree. No one's focusing in on that because that's the future. They don't need to put the chip inside your body because you're wearing it. So guess what? Problem solved.
Mm-hmm.
While we're not paying attention to what's actually happening in our world, while we're being fear-mongered into believing and waiting for something to happen in the future is happening now.
So
and the reason why it's allowed to continue is because we don't pay attention.
So what do you make then of something like a Bitcoin coming along and then, oh, guess what? Someone just killed themselves the other day regarding Bitcoin. Like, you know, is it a bona fide other currency that has the official old world bankers upset, and that's what that suicide really was? Or what do you think is going on with Bitcoin?
Okay. Now, I wrote about this last year, and the Bitcoin people did not like me for it. They hacked into my website because of it. So I'll go ahead and talk about it here.
Okay, let's do that. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm speaking with Suzanne Fozel. She's on Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park, and we're gonna get into something that got her hacked into last year. So let's see what happens.
Bitcoin has an international banking ID number. Bitcoin is insured and funded and supported by the Central Bank of France and Credit Suisse. They are no longer an anonymous individual currency, the cryptocurrency. They are funded and supported and backed by technocratic bankers. Okay? Period. End of story. The article is in my website. You can click on the source links. Don't take my word for it. It's true.
Was it started up originally as what it would sell itself to us as? In other words, was it a bona fide alternative attempt to make it, you know, easier and give us an alternative, and then it was sort of corrupted at an early stage? Or was it a plan, you know, like was it a plan from the beginning to do this, or what do you think?
Well, now we're in speculation, and
I know.
You know, I don't really like to go here. I don't know.
I just wondered if you knew anything about that.
I do know that 12 years ago, J.P. Morgan Chase patented a Bitcoin-like cryptocurrency exchange, and why would, or 14 years ago, why would they do that? Okay, so obviously people who knew, but when you talk about an anonymous, safe alternative currency that is backed by the Central Bank of France and Credit Suisse, who Credit Suisse was also involved in the mortgage-backed securities debacle, by the way. They made a lot of money off of that.
That's right.
This is no longer the people's cryptocurrency, okay? Now, I know that the IRS just said that Bitcoin is property. And what that means is, for a lot of people who don't know and maybe don't care, it is kind of important. They think of it as the equity in your house. Now, when you bought your house, you paid $100,000 for it, and after 10 years, you got a worth or an equity worth of $200,000. But the very next year, the market drops, and your house is worth $98,000. That's the same thing that the IRS is doing to Bitcoin. That's something to pay attention to, especially if you have your actual money invested in Bitcoin. You might want to pay attention to the fact that it is now considered property and subject to markets, and markets fluctuate up and down. So what your Bitcoin is worth today might not be what it's worth tomorrow or 10 years from now. You might lose it all. But you're not investing in a digital payment system that is not controlled by technocratic banks. So unfortunately, Bitcoin is not the answer. Now, I was just speaking with a friend of mine who's a search engine optimizer, and he was talking about Dogecoin.
Say it again.
Dogecoin.
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 Okay, what is that?
Well, it's another version of Bitcoin. The president of Amazon, I believe it was Amazon, just he's going to allow Dogecoin to be used as currency to pay for things.
Oh, sure, because if you're interested in Bitcoin, you're probably also interested in this.
Exactly, folks. It's called marketing. You're under a spell.
It's, you know, the old Amazon.
Bill Hicks made that joke about
kill
marketers.
Yourself.
He didn't do that for no reason, okay? He knew what he was saying.
I know. Absolutely. Oh, my
so
goodness.
So here's the interesting thing about the Dogecoin that came out in conversation. And, you know, he knows he's talking to a journalist. Well, you know, so here we are. He's trying to get me to buy Dogecoin. Uh-huh. And I'm not going to, but I'd like to hear his pitch. So he's pitching me on the sale of Dogecoin because he's got a vested interest in it. But anyway, he explains to me that it's so easy that I could go down to Wells Fargo and take my $50 fiat and trade it in, and they will give me the equivalent in Dogecoin. I said, whoa, wait a second, hold on. Why would Wells Fargo offer that service?
Yeah.
Why would Wells Fargo, one of the largest technocratic
maybe they have
banks,
some kind of startup interest in this new alternative currency?
They have a startup interest in the – yes, I am looking into it right now, folks. So the information I'm giving you is very raw. I haven't vetted everything, but what I've found so far is yes.
Not as raw as my guess was. My guess was even more raw. I didn't even research that at all.
They have a vested interest in it on 2 points. They have a vested interest as a corporation, and they also make a return every time that you do this little exchange. They
sure.
They skeeve a little off the top, so to speak. You know what I mean?
I do know. So, yeah. Everybody, speaking of a little bit off the top, this is the part. Oh, I think I lost my thread on this one. I was going to say this about Bitcoin. Oh, yeah, about Bitcoin. The thing that has entertained me so much about Bitcoin is, you know, its relatively inexpensive starting price and kind of getting ignored and brushed aside by people. But then it got to a point where it seems that most of the criticisms that I hear about Bitcoin, that it's shady, that you don't know who's really controlling it, that you don't know really how it goes up or down, that you don't really know how or when you're going to profit, that you can't be sure it's going to be there when you finally get to cash out. All of the criticisms of Bitcoin also apply to Federal Reserve notes and regular money.
Right, because Bitcoin comes out of nowhere, the same way that the Federal Reserve note comes out of nowhere.
Sure.
Its worth is based on the market, on the economic market, and the worth of different fiats around the world, which is based on the U.S. dollar as the U.S. Global reserve currency. So Bitcoin is subject to what the markets are doing as far as currency fluctuation. So it's not anonymous in the sense that it's not outside of the fiat system. You still have to then translate it into some sort of fiat currency. Or you can remain digital and hope that some company will accept your Bitcoin or your Dogecoin or whatever as payment. Some places do.
I was wondering if you could use Dogecoin to pay for karate lessons, but that's probably a bit of a reach for too many listeners.
Well, what we're seeing right now with Bitcoin and all these other cryptocurrencies is this is a new product. New products out on the market tend to have a lot of flaws. I'll give you an example.
Have a lot of flaws?
Right, inherent to the new product. I'll give you an example.
I understand what you're saying. It's another one of these. You're just cutting in and out so much, it's hard to.
It sounds perfectly fine on my end. So
I know.
When I send it to you, it'll probably
okay.
It'll make more sense.
All right.
In the 1920s, when they first started constructing roller coasters, every day that someone got on a roller coaster, they died. At least one person every single time they got on a roller coaster died. And the people who built the roller coasters just packed up their stuff and went to the next town. Now, it didn't deter people from riding roller coasters, even though the mortality rate was extremely exorbitantly high.
Sure.
And as over time, they perfected how they build them and how they construct them and what technologies they can use to make them safer. And still we have people who die on roller coasters. However, it's taken from the 1920s till, you know, the most recent years to perfect that art, to perfect that product, in order to bring it to the audience more safely. So we have a problem here where we're watching these cryptocurrencies, which are now popular, but it's like a newborn baby. We're looking at a 2-week-old baby, and we're expecting that 2-week-old infant to behave like a 32-year-old grown adult. It's not going to work. We're going to see a lot of problems with this cryptocurrencies as they come through. It's just inherent of a new technology that we're using. It'll get better as it goes on. The problem that I see with it is that in the shadows and sometimes right behind it are the central banks. So I don't see how we're doing anything outside of the system that they've already concocted. And the fact that we're moving toward cryptocurrencies and more trendy forms of digital currency shows me that we don't have to worry about the dollar crashing. That's old news. In Canada, you guys have polymer notes. That's plastic. And we just got our $100 plastic notes. So they're getting rid of paper money. They've got plastic representations of the paper money, and they've got the card swipe, and they've got the digital currency with the cryptocurrency. So guess what, folks? Quit listening to the fearmongers who keep making you crazy every single day, showing you isolated incidents on the stock market and telling you that the dollar is going to crash, and start paying attention to what's happening in the news and the banking industry, where they are moving to completely digitized money. So it doesn't matter if the yuan crashes or the dollar crashes or the ruble crashes, because everything's digital.
You know, the thing is about Bitcoin is that it's been set up, it seems, as a trusty adversarial alternative to traditional banking.
And, of course it has. And let me tell you why.
If you go to that, though, I mean, so was the sales job that was put over on the public regarding Jekyll Island in the first place when the Federal Reserve was created. It was sold as a thing that would be crummy for the banks. This isn't going to be good for the banks, was the kind of energy and the sort of the word they were putting out. And then when people heard, hey, this isn't good for the banks, good, I hope it happens, let's do it. And that is the same kind of feel I'm getting with this, that it's like they're trying to make it seem like it's a terrible thing. And then when people usher it in, then it's somehow the banks are going to benefit from that also.
It's called reverse psychology. If you're a parent, you do it to your kids. If you're in a manipulative relationship, that other partner is doing it to you. Your boss does it to you. The marketers do it to you. The corporations do it to you. It's reverse psychology. See, there's a phenomenon that most people are not aware of when it comes to psychology and why we respond the way that we do. When we are emotionally charged, it's called in the psychiatric community, it's called the rebel response. And we automatically puff ourselves up, either physically or proverbially, and we just go to town with that person because we are now defending our right to do this, that, and the other, our existence, our person. It's no longer about the object, the Bitcoin or the coffee maker or the car accident. It's about, I'm going to get what I want. I'm going to do what I want. I don't like you. You're an authoritarian. I'm going to show you who's boss. And if they have a large sect of the people in that position, in that emotional state, then they can introduce something like, oh, here's the other white meat. Here's Bitcoin. Here's other cryptocurrencies. Here you go, rebels. Take that and run with it. And it works. And then people who are on the fence get either bullied by the rebels who are using Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies, or they're just not even fazed by it. But even that doesn't even matter, because everyone then falls into demographics. And they've got different ways of dealing with everyone. So the fact that they want to move everyone to digital currencies, either through cryptocurrencies or just numbers on a computer screen, or you can just hold some device up and pay for things. The point is, we're going to go there. Whether we go there because we're going to show them who's boss and we're actually doing what they want, which is the manipulation that a lot of parents use on their kids, or we just blindly go ahead with it because it's trendy and it's cool, and we don't want to not be part of the cool crowd. Nobody wants to sit alone at the lunch table.
Where do we get to have the debate or the conversation, though, of why is it apparently necessary to need to have a job or what have you as a way of suckling at the teat of monetary income, and that everybody's doing it at a different level, and most of it's going to the upper percentage of the upper 1%. So how is it that in a situation like that, that we can't even take the time to say, maybe this whole system isn't working properly, and we don't just need to address some of the smaller symptoms, like we were saying earlier about addressing symptoms, but the absolute cause of why this is happening?
The absolute cause of why this is all happening is boiled down to our inability to not respond emotionally.
To
and
not
the best
respond
part
emotionally.
About this is it's completely controllable by us. We can choose at any moment not to respond emotionally to the information or the changes in our world, and we can sit back, take in the information, analyze it, and make a logical, informed decision. Once we start using that process, we will be able to actually affect change and make decisions that benefit us and not them. It doesn't take a product. It doesn't take, you don't have to part with your money. You don't have to buy anything. You don't have to adhere to anything. You don't have to show up to any meetings. There's nothing involved. It's you and your mind. And the next time that you hear information that gets you emotionally charged, if you take a step back for a minute and say, okay, that makes me upset. I get that. But what about this as actual fact? Is it designed just to make me upset? Or is it designed to help me or further me along in my personal endeavors? If it's not, then you can automatically reject that. We also have a self-esteem problem here in the United States. I don't know if it's indicative across the globe, but I do notice it here in the United States. We don't respect ourselves. We don't care about ourselves enough, and we don't care about the other people that we say that we love enough to stand up and say, no, you're not going to treat me that way. No, you're not going to do that to me. It's up to us. But since we allow marketers to sell us products, since we allow marketers to sell us ideas, since we allow marketers to sell us news, since we allow marketers to sell us governments, we're just riding along hoping that, you know, we're not going to hit the shoreline too bad, or that there'll be bumpers and we don't break our boat. But we're at the mercy of whoever is steering the boat.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, I hear you. I just get a little frustrated sometimes because I just think it's ultimately cruel to need to be on a roundabout that you can suffer some great risks from being on or trying to get on or what have you, and everybody has a different problem or something they're working through, and to just always have to make someone go through that. It just seems, you know, there's more to the way we function as a species than that. I mean,
oh, think about how we function now.
Think
about
it.
We get mad at our spouse, or we get mad at our children, or our boss, or somebody who cuts us off in the road while we're driving to work, and then our whole day is ruined because one moment, and we allowed ourselves to get so emotionally charged by that moment, we reacted so strongly that the entire day is ruined. We don't stand up and say, okay, fine, cut me off, great. You're going to make it to the next accident. You're going to be the one who gets the ticket. Go ahead and get in front of me. Who cares? We are constantly put in the fight or flight feeling. Cortisone is being dumped into our system on an every single moment basis. We are further and further isolated, which is detrimental to our mental stability because we are social creatures. We are not physically in front of each other anymore, and that's really a bad thing because 95% of our communication is body language, so we don't understand each other anymore. We're not physically with each other. We don't have real relationships anymore. We feel isolated. We feel depressed. We feel alone. And so when somebody cuts us off, it's like a volcano going off. We have been taught over time to become emotionally reactive creatures because it benefits those who enslave us. If you want to be the free person that you already are, stop reacting to your life. Just try it for a week or two. Just try it. And if it doesn't work, go back to the way you were living your life before. And no harm, because you didn't have to buy a product. You didn't have to go on a system. You didn't have to show up at a meeting. It's just you.
So you're in line, and that person at the coffee shop turns around, spills their coffee all over your coat. And normally, hey, what are you doing? And they get all upset. So what? How would you react to that?
How would I react to that?
Yeah.
Where's the napkins?
Pardon?
Where's the napkins? Let's clean this up.
Okay.
The way that I think is, you know, I'm 36 years old, and for most of my life, I understand most of my friends are very emotional, male and female. I came from an emotional house. In fact, everybody I know came from an emotional house. I'm interested in solutions. I'm interested in how can we get to the place where we've solved this problem. And if I'm going to sit there and complain about you spilling hot coffee on me, we're not going to get to a situation where we're going to solve the problem. The problem is my shirt is being stained as we speak, so let's clean this up. Then we can figure out why you bumped into me and whether or not it's even an issue. Most of the time, it's literally just the fact that we don't understand personal space and we stand right behind each other and you're bound to get spilled on occasionally. So you might want to, you know, when you're standing in line, maybe take a step back or two and let the other guy have some breathing room. It has to do with the fact that we've been standing in lines for so long that we're so anxious to get the thing that we're standing in line for that we don't pay attention to the people, the human beings that have thoughts and feelings and the right to be there too, in front of us or behind us. So if it just, for me, it spins right back to self-esteem. Emotional responses equal bad choices. And like taking the example that you gave me, if you make an emotional response to a situation, you usually have to clean up a mess. So what was going on with the guy in front of me? Was he thinking about something, distracted, tripped over his shoe and accidentally spilled it on me? Was I standing too close behind him and then when he went to take a step back, he spilled it on me? Is any of this relevant? Are we going to be thinking about this when we're dying in our 90s?
So you just need to be more conscious and more present and more in the moment all the time, as much as you can.
Yes, we need to, you know, the one of the main problems that we have in our society is that we don't care about each other. We just don't. We literally just don't. Everybody's in our way. And guess what? You're in their way. And that guy over there is in his way. We all together make a society.
Yeah, that guy over there, I don't have time for him, but go ahead.
Well, exactly. We don't have time for that guy. But you know what? When we pay it forward, you want to talk about predictive programming? Watch the movie Pay It Forward.
Okay.
And you want to emulate some things instead of these scary Terminator movies and get all freaked out every time you see a robot. Why don't you watch Pay It Forward and try emulating that? Try doing a good deed for someone. You know, the great thing about giving is it raises your dopamine levels and it makes you want to do more. It makes you happier instantly. Instantly, it makes you happy. And if you're happy, then you want to be happy with other people. And when they're happy with you, you made them happy. And they're going to, you see how this goes, folks? If we weren't so upset and so depressed and so scared and so absolutely terrified into states like deers in the headlight in our world, imagine what we could do. If we absolutely care about each other, imagine what we could do. If we stood up for who we are and say, I have a right to be here because I am here and you don't have the right to take that from me, imagine what we could do. This is just one version of a society. This is just one version of a government. This is just one version of a global control system. There are other ways of doing things. We need to open our minds. We need to stop defending our belief systems because they're erroneous. And we need to start being kind to each other and being considerate of each other and taking care of ourselves and each other. And it's like a wave. It goes out into the world and everybody that you touch is happier. And they're going to do better things. They're going to behave better at their job. They're going to behave better with their spouse. They're going to behave better with their children. They're going to behave better with people they don't like.
Well, there's the forward two steps and back one step mentality with that, though, because it's difficult. A lot of people are like, yeah, I don't have time for that. I've got two jobs or three jobs, and I'm trying to make sure, you know, we can do all the things I need to do. And, you know, they get caught up in their own thing. And it's like, yeah, that reason you need three jobs is that is what we're trying to address here. Okay. You shouldn't need three jobs to put yourself in the point where you're, ignorant to sort of information that you could use to get you out of a detrimental situation.
Well, sure. Take your job for an example. Everyone listening, just take your job for if you work for someone else, you're a slave. If you have your own business and your own job, then you're free as far as the marketplace goes, as far as the corporate culture goes.
Sure.
So right now, I just wrote an article about this 3 weeks ago. Right now, they're seeing a huge boom in college students, PhD college students, who go to school and have no way to get a job. So you know what they're doing? They're not sitting at home doing nothing. They're creating startup companies on the internet. And within a 2-year to 5-year period, they're making several hundreds of thousands of dollars with projected equity in their company to millions of dollars within the next 10 years. So guess what? If you don't like your job, What do you like to do? What are you interested in? Find a way to monetize that and start your own company. It's really not that hard. And the internet makes it easier than ever to do so. So guess what, folks? You have options. You don't have to live the life that you're living. You don't have to keep feeding into the programs that your brain is used to having you live under. You don't have to live under the chemical composition that the society wants you to have induced in your brain every single moment with books and TV and movie and media. You can make your own decision. It's out there. It's not that hard. We have to think bigger. We have to think, okay, this is one way of a society, one way of a culture, and it doesn't work because most of us are unhappy and most of us are depressed and most of us are on pharmaceuticals and most of us are eating food that we know is bad for us and most of us do decisions every single day that we know is not good for our health or our mental health or our physical health or even our economic future, but we do them anyway. That shows me that there's a mental problem and it's cultural. Okay, so this type of thinking doesn't work. What could we do with it? We don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but how can we change this? How can we improve upon it? Because this system doesn't work. And when we have innovators who are brave enough to look at things without an emotional response, but with logic and reasoning and make informed decisions, it doesn't matter what they do. We're not going to participate in it. How many of us would allow our spouse to punch us in the face every single night?
I don't. Every night?
Every single night.
Well, not every night.
Okay, well, see? If you would accept it at any time, there's a self-esteem issue. There's
sure.
a problem. You would not accept, if you were in your right mind, you would not accept someone physically harming you, emotionally harming you, abusing you in any way, shape, or form. You would not accept it. So
no.
Obviously we don't know how to deal with aggressive people because we're telling our children right now when they're being bullied, go find the administrator and walk away. You know what, folks? That doesn't work. I got kids. That don't work.
Mm-hmm.
We need to teach our young people how to effectively communicate with each other. We need to teach our young people that what they believe in and who they are can be expanded. And if it can work in the marketplace, they could make it into a job. We need
Do you
to
think it's ever deliberate, though, that these things that you talk about, like staying connected and all that kind of stuff, is blown apart by an unbelievable amount of personal screen time that we all avail ourselves
yes.
of now? People are listening. They've got headphones on in the public transit. They're looking at screens. Medium-sized screens, bigger screens, larger screens, and everybody is zoning out. And I've been lately trying to just deliberately talk to someone that I don't know on my travels anytime I go out, you know. And I do it in a way that I know I wouldn't have done that before. And I'll just start talking to someone or ask them about something and just try to reconnect that thing because, you know, we're just all staring at these little screens and ignoring each other.
Yes, that is part of the problem. That is part of the new programming. With a new technological society becomes the necessity for more technology. And the only way they can do that is to keep us isolated, to change the family coming over or friends coming over for dinner to, hey, let's put our laptops up and you have dinner in Singapore and I'll have dinner in Canada and we'll eat together and it's like we're together. No. The problem
right.
is our DNA and our genetics have not caught up with our technological advancements. We're still needing physical attention. We still need actual touch. The dopamine levels that are raised by a friend putting their hand on your shoulder and saying nothing is 75 times higher than a friend leaving you a message on Skype or a comment on Facebook or an email. That only raises your dopamine levels to about 3-5%. What that means is you're not emotionally changed by the goodwill intention of the other person because of these. Only reason is that they weren't physically there. Even a phone call, even hearing the voice of a loved one. I live 3,000 miles away from my family. They're all down in Florida. I call my mother once a month just because I want to hear her voice. And that makes me feel so much better for the rest of the week, knowing that I haven't seen her physically in 3 years.
Yeah. Okay, Suzanne, I want to talk to you about a couple more things before we go. Get your opinion on a couple of things, because you are just so impressive. Ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't been to OccupyCorporatism.com, it spells just like it sounds, OccupyCorporatism.com. See, that was easy. Put it in there. Look at all these stories. Look at the depth of the research involved. It's hard to believe that you can go to a regular website, like a CNN type of thing, and see so many people working towards putting out so much news, and there's hardly anything there. And then you go to Suzanne's website, and she's pretty much on her own. And it's amazing how much she's got and the depth of journalistic integrity on so many of these stories. It's just incredible. It shouldn't be that way. It should be the other way around, but it isn't. So check it out. Here's a story I want to ask you about. Got to go there. It's no scientific support for global warming theory, says climatologist. Now, this is another hot button issue. Hey, not looking for a pun there. But what is this scientific latest development in the way of global warming slash climate change?
Well, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has come out with a report. They came out with it Monday. And a leaked version was sent out ahead of time. And, oh my God, food shortages, extreme weather changes, coastal flooding, a rise in greenhouse emissions, diminishing crops. Oh my God, it's Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome meets the starving people in Africa. And that's just really kind of not the case. The UN Population Fund's own documents state that it's not the amount of food that is being produced, it's the lack of access to that food that is causing people in third world nations to starve.
Yeah, they won't distribute it. They can't distribute it, or they won't.
They won't distribute it. You know, Bill Gates was talking at a conference, and I sat and listened to the entire interview just so I could catch some really good snippets of things, because Bill Gates, no matter how many times they've coached him, he just says stuff that he shouldn't say.
Right.
And here he is talking about the economy of third world nations, and about how he's put so much money and so much energy and effort into building up India's economy and his vaccine initiatives to lower whatever, you know, the population. And he's explaining that the problem with food markets globally is that in third world countries, when the farmers bring their crops to the market, they fudge up the numbers. They don't give accurate numbers. So we don't know how much food is being produced. And unfortunately, because these people in third world countries are not earning enough for their GDP. You know, each person, just like here in the United States, each person in Africa is responsible for a certain amount of the GDP. Well, if they're not producing enough to support the GDP and above, then the government, according to Bill Gates, is wasting their money helping to sustain these people.
Right.
So with the IPCC, they're talking about all these things that are going to happen, all these scary, scary things that are going to, and it's always 2100 or 2050 or 2300, some wacky number that nobody's going to be alive. Our great grandchildren might be dealing with this, but I do want to remind you that some of the predictions, I'll be nice to him. You know, Al Gore makes these predictions that did not happen, and he said it was going to happen. Early, what was it, 2014 or 2013, didn't come to fruition. What nobody talks about, and when I say nobody, I mean anybody but me, what a lot of people don't talk about is we have been manipulating the weather on this planet since 1908, okay? 1908, it goes all the way back.
What were we doing then?
Different manipulations with crops, different experimentations with different pesticides and different ways of In agriculture, you have natural marrying of different types of plants together to create a new plant, just like we do with breeds of dogs and cats. And then you have the Monsanto version of that. So farmers and big agra has been manipulating the plants and manipulating how they are able to survive on our planet for a very long time. Now, because of technology and because of the advancements, and there's an article on my website, it's called 13 Patents that Prove Geoengineering is Causing Global Warming. I found a patent from 1920 where they were perfecting what is now the wonderful chemtrails and all these new clouds that we see in the sky that aren't really clouds. They're just remnants of somebody else's chemtrails about 5 miles back. Geoengineering has almost irrevocably destroyed our natural weather system on this planet, period. If we keep going, there's going to be no end to it. And we will see absolute extreme weather, and we won't be able to do a damn thing about it. They need to stop geoengineering the planet. They need to stop putting the alumina in the sky. They need to stop manipulating the weather storms. They need to just last year, this company out of Canada was using, a university out of Canada, I'm sorry, was using vortex technology, creating man-made tornadoes to create static electricity, which then could be then siphoned into our, replacing our nuclear reactors with tornadoes.
Sounds good so far.
In Dubai, funded by the UK government, and actually the Queen went to Dubai to watch this. They had found a way to ionize the clouds in the desert and create fake thunderstorms. They were actually successful in creating torrential downpours 52 times. 52 times fake rainstorms, torrential downpours with these apparatus.
We know that weather manipulation goes on when other countries do it. I mean, we've made fun of the Russians for doing it, and we've got jokes about the Chinese doing it, and they were doing it for the Olympics. But then when you mention it at home, everyone's like, oh, come on, you can't manipulate the weather? I mean, what kind of two different brains do you need to have both of those thoughts going at the same time?
Well, people need to go on their state website and look at where the budgeting is going. If you live in Colorado, if you live in Texas, if you live in Washington State, I know for a fact that some of your budget money for your state is going to cloud seeding. Cloud seeding is geoengineering.
Is going to geoengineering.
Cloud seeding.
Cloud seeding.
Cloud right. seeding. What they do is they put these chemicals into the clouds. And they spray the clouds so that they will create more ice, more rain, so that during the winter the snowpack is fuller. And then states like Washington State, which is dependent on the snowpack for water consumption for the rest of the year, they now know that they have a certain level of snowpack. And it's written right into the budget. So, yes, they are. And they've been geoengineering. A lot of states have been doing this for over a decade now.
They've been doing it for how long, sorry?
Some of the states have been doing it for over a decade.
No.
So,
all right, two more things I want to bring up before we go to get your take on it. Had you heard, this is from The Examiner, one of my favorites. This is from late February, but I've been trying to get this mentioned and talked about on the show for a while now, so here we go. February 25th. Catholic Pope Francis Bergoglio was named as the chief defendant in a child trafficking case involving Catholic orphans. Who? The current Pope. You know, the guy that's acting really nice all the time? Pope Francis will be asked to defend his role in child trafficking during Argentine's 1970s junta dirty war. This case of orphan children from missing political prisoners was set for trial on March 31st, 2014 in a Brussels International Court. I haven't heard much of this in the mainstream, but I think it's pretty fascinating that, you know, it just seems lately the mainstream coverage of the Pope is, he's being such a nice guy here. He's he's not wearing all of the fancy clothes, and he's not availing himself of all the financial comforts. And, you know, he's telling, you know, we got to back off of this whole gay thing. And he's just trying to be a nice guy to everybody. And then this comes up, you know, he's been nailed and they're going to have this investigation.
Well, I've got a friend named Kevin Galele. And he is the deputy prime minister to the People's Party in Canada.
Which party, sorry?
The People's Party. I think it's the People's Party. He writes for the U.S. Independent, and he's doing a hunger strike. He's flying to Rome in about a week and a half. And he is going to perform the hunger strike at the doorstep of the Vatican to force the Vatican to respond to depopulation policies that they signed off on in 1969. All of the governments and the UN and the Vatican signed an agreement. It's on the Vatican website. I have the source link. I can give it to you so you can put it up there so your listeners can hear it.
Okay, great.
And what they signed off on was that they would be silent and ultimately complacent in depopulation overt and covert policies that were to be enacted by the United Nations and funded through wealthier countries like the United States and the UK. And you can see factual repercussions of this, like in the mid-70s when the UK and the United States poured a lot of, quote, financial aid or foreign aid into the Indian government, which then turned around and put up makeshift sterilization huts, which resulted in the death of millions of women because of the procedure. Talk about depopulation there. Not only are they sterilizing them for the ones who survive, but the ones who do not survive, well, you know, we were trying to depopulate anyway.
Hmm.
The Vatican has a lot to answer for. I was shocked.
They do, but no one's ever making them do it. I mean, they're just, you know, they're on a honeymoon with this guy. Oh, look, it's the new pope. He's got such a nice face. Look at him. Isn't he wonderful?
Exactly.
On and on.
Well, remember John Paul II?
Yeah. Same thing.
Nice-looking guy.
He was the apple
lovely
doll pope. You know, he was the little carved apple doll pope.
Exactly. You just want to hug the guy, except he's really kind of a ruthless dude when he was younger.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get into certain positions without having accomplished certain things. And it's never pretty.
No. All right. Speaking of never pretty, this is another one that is very controversial, always getting people upset. And I wasn't going to bring it up today. And I don't have any mention of it on your website at the moment, not on the very first page anyhow. But listen to this. Sandy Hook. Okay. I don't know what you're going to say about it. I haven't even really gone into it deeply on this show. There have just been too many unanswered questions. But I saw a video the other day on YouTube, and I'll have to find it. I was looking for it a few minutes ago, and I couldn't get it. But it blew my mind. Okay, here's why. The guy who is doing the tube, and I'll find it and I'll credit this cat. He has found that in 2009... the city records of that area, he basically has a map up on his screen, you know, so you're looking at his computer, a screen-o-matic or whatever it is, and whatever street he lands on in Sandy Hook, whichever street it is on, Riverview or Riverside or whatever it is, whichever house he goes to the records of, he finds that the house was paid off, done and done, and so they're not even paying a mortgage on it. House after house after house, and he's inferring that the town was basically paid off and set up ahead of time, like the whole thing was an op. Like, here's your house, you get to have a house. And he says, it's unbelievable that so many of the place, even the town itself, was awarded a large parcel of land as a purchase. And all of the records that this guy has been able to find, and all of the deals went down on Christmas Day, 2009. So he's like, well, this must be the only signing of a mortgage in the whole country in 2009 on that day. No one does these kind of deals on Christmas Day. But there's a ton of these houses and other things bought and paid for on 2009 Christmas Day for the dollar amount of zero. And these are like, this is like the official sort of the government, you know, where you can tap in and see how much a house was being sold for and how much was it sold for and who are the people that bought it. Like, that's a kind of a real estate board thing you can check out. And the whole town, it seems like, was everybody there had their homes bought and paid for like a couple of years before this terrible thing happened. What do you think of that?
I don't know. Was he producing tax records from the land and tax office?
Yeah.
I know that all of the families happened to set up memorial funds and websites, and they've made some of the parents have actually gone on speaking tours and made bukus of money on the foundations that they set up for the victim, for their children, and the speaking tours. And there's probably book deals and movie deals in the works. I wouldn't doubt that. And that's a lot of money up front.
I know this is speculation, but is it possible that we have created an entire town for the purposes of fear? And, you know, you were saying, like, keeping people scared, keeping people in fear, you're going to need to do some ops once in a while. And wouldn't it be feasible that one op you might want to try is to set up a little town and then terrorize the whole nation by having people go nuts with guns? And there are some very other strange things about Sandy Hook that I haven't looked at, like when people are just walking into the building and back out, and in and back out, round and round like this.
When it comes to something like that, and Jack, I was on Jack Blood's show yesterday, and we were talking about Sandy Hook. I take this stance when it comes to stuff like this. If anybody's got kids, you know they can't keep a secret, okay? And that's just common sense. If they overhear you and your husband or you and your wife saying something, it ends up next time you're at dinner with family or friends, they blurt it out, okay? So, because it's common personality trait of small children, and these are elementary school kids, somebody's going to say something. If that were true, somebody's going to say something. If they haven't said it now, they're going to say it eventually. So I don't think that the government would take that kind of chance. If they were going to go to the elaborate stake of creating a town just so they could have a psyop, what it makes more sense logically is, where's Adam Lanza? Because there's
where's
no
Adam
proof
Lanza? Yes.
That he was actually on the premises, and the only motive has been discounted. His mother was not teaching. So guess what? He's got no reason to be there and no reason to do that. And there's no proof that he was ever on the grounds that day. So where's Adam Lanza, and why are they blaming him? What's going on there? I think when we answer that question, we might be a little bit closer to actual facts and less conjecture. And the problem with all of the conjecture that's surrounding Sandy Hook and other things is that eventually all of the different theories that people think are facts become facts, and then the actual facts are no longer necessary, and nobody cares
right.
about what actually happened, because everybody believes the theories that are now being touted as facts, and everyone has a belief. And look, folks, all they want you to do is believe something. It doesn't matter how they get you there, okay? When you're going nowhere, any road will take you there. So if you are going to not understand a situation, they're going to make sure that you don't understand the situation. There's a lot of fake information out there. There's a lot of, it sounds plausible, but it's still over the top. And there are theories. Unfortunately, the people who actually were involved are not talking. And until one of them speak, and we can get their stuff down in a way that everyone will accept that as fact through an affidavit or a taped video or whatever it takes for the audience or the
yeah,
public
to believe
the statement from this person who was actually mm-hmm. there. Until that happens, we have speculation. And speculation leads to, I don't know, bunk, lies, conspiracy. Mm-hmm. And the problem with that is everyone who is regurgitating theories, honestly, to the rest of the world, look absolutely crazy. And then that's the unfortunate part, because something did happen at Sandy Hook. Something did happen to Adam Lanza. Something did happen to those children.
Yeah, but what?
Exactly. But what? Exactly. You know, how many licks does it take to get to the Tootsie Roll center of a Tootsie Pop, right?
Well, I would rather ponder that question in my life if I were able to have the choice, but I seem to not have that choice.
Well, there are many reasons why I don't send my kids to public school and why I homeschool. That is one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, Suzanne Posel, OccupyCorporatism.com. It has been a pleasure. Thank you for coming back on the show in 2014.
Absolutely.
And, we'll have you on again sometime.
Thanks for listening to Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park. Please offer comments or complaints by emailing conspiracyqueries@gmail.com or on Twitter at @con_queries or at our website, conspiracyqueries.com. Thanks for listening.